Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good, and it's the aggressive nature that the French are taking against terrorism in their country. Obviously, in the wake of Friday's ISIS-sponsored terrorist attacks that had six different phases to it. Overnight, we learned about major raids taking place. Several major raids had already taken place. The one that was caught with gunfire, basically on live television, was in the northern suburbs. At least one terrorist blew herself up with a suicide vest. Another terrorist was found dead. We don't know if the believed-to-be mastermind is in custody or still on the loose. But it's obvious from what the French are doing both internally and in their airstrikes against ISIS that they are not kidding around here.
Most of us will never be in a law enforcement or intelligence analysis position. And so we don't know the exact nature of the choices before them. And if you've got partial information about folks who you think might be part of a cell, maybe there's value in bringing them in. Maybe there's value if you follow them more. You know, maybe you can follow them and lead to other ISIS or Islamist extremist terrorists that you don't know about before. On the other hand, if you leave them on the street, maybe they suddenly get a gun and start shooting people. You know, everybody in law enforcement faces this very tough decision. And it looks like the French have said, okay, we've gathered all we can gather from these guys. Let's move in and get them before they execute another attack. We saw the evacuation of that soccer stadium in Germany yesterday, the number of planes that have been rerouted or forced to land because of called in threats and things like that. Look, everybody's acting in an abundance of caution right now. It's going to involve a lot of inconvenience, a lot of frustration, but one, it's going to be necessary. And two, I'm glad to see us bringing these guys in. I'm sure the stories of French interrogators probably could curl your toes and make you sound like all of a sudden, you know, Gitmo doesn't seem so bad. Look, French are pulling out all the stops on this, and it is appreciated. I need to point out, not just at the domestic front and all across Europe, we're seeing these sorts of raids. Boy, oh boy, we're seeing on bombing of ISIS. And faster, baby. Let's do it, because I don't really understand what the advantage would be to not sending a large-scale military assault, even if you're concerned about ground troops. If there's a spot where you think ISIS guys are in there planning, hit it. Maybe you get the big ringleader, maybe you don't. But at this point, the choice is, do you want to have bloodshed in Syria, in Iraq, or do you want to have bloodshed in Paris?
On to the bad martini now. And while the French are kicking in doors and taking terrorists into custody, the U.S. response to this is just mind-boggling in many different ways. We talked about the president's response to it yesterday. Also yesterday, Secretary of State John Kerry, in Paris, mind you, comparing what happened on Friday to what happened earlier this year when ISIS-sponsored terrorists took out 12 people in Paris, including many in the offices of Charlie Hebdo.
There's something different about what happened from Charlie Hebdo, and I think everybody would feel that. There was a sort of particularized focus and perhaps even a legitimacy in terms of not a legitimacy, but a rationale that you could attach yourself to somehow and say, okay, they're really angry because of this or that.
There might be more of an explanation, Jim, but basically what Kerry's saying here is that on some level, those people deserved it.
John Kerry has done a lot for my career, Greg. Longtime listeners and readers of National Review will remember the Kerry spot in 2004. So I always feel like I owe him a little bit of a debt, that his utter incompetence, his flip-flopping, his persona, I think as Rob Long did it, as the sort of guy that the Marx Brothers always made fun of, you know, the kind of the smug, stuck-up, arrogant, elitist type who wasn't really that smart but was totally convinced he was really smart. It's been done a lot of good for us. But of course, I never really expected to actually be Secretary of State and be in this sort of position. Look, we've all spoken off the cuff and said things that came out the wrong way, or we realized about mid-sentence this was going to turn out, this was not turning out the way we wanted. But this is really bad. This is really bad because really, the interesting thing is that the old, he didn't really mean to say that they were justified. But he's starting to rank the terror attacks, and he's clearly trying to say, well, The Friday night's terrorist attacks were worse than Charlie Hebdo. And why? I don't think there is any good reason to say. In both cases, you're running around killing people who don't deserve to be killed. Now, the only thing you can say is like, well, one was done as being provocative to Muslims. Greg, haven't we been told by this administration that, you know, terrorism and ISIS has nothing to do with Islam?
Right.
Right. I mean, like, if you try to imagine ISIS without Islam, it's really hard to. I think the closest you could get to would be like the Brotherhood of Shadows from the first Batman movie, Greg. Right. I mean, they're secretive guys in the mountain who hate the West and denounce its arrogance and decadence and try to kill people in mass terror attacks. But that doesn't exist. That doesn't exist in the real world. Liam Neeson is not really a bad guy. In fact, he spends his time running around giving them menacing, you know, speeches over the phone. In other words, this is kind of integral to it. Thinking on this is so wrapped up in pieties and political correctness and stuff like that, that he meant to say what happened Friday night was completely unjustifiable. Hebdo, maybe. And then he realized where he was going, and he tries to slam on the brakes mid-sentence, and he realizes he can't stop it. He's already got too much momentum rhetorically of where he's going. He really shouldn't speak off the cuff. He's terrible off the cuff. And things like this happen. At this point, somewhere at the State Department, they're like, all right, you know, call James Taylor again. I talked about this before. They should have sent Toby Keith. This thing brought to you courtesy of the blue, white, and red.
There you go. I was just going to say, as embarrassing as it was, James Taylor may actually be our best diplomatic approach in moments like this, because the president and John Kerry are dropping the ball like we can't even believe here.
All right. Dropping the ball like the Jets and the Bears lately.
Exactly. All right. On to the crazy martini now. And we go back to domestic politics. There's so much going on in relation to the war on terror that perhaps some folks weren't aware that last night on Special Report, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal announced he was suspending his campaign. So the Republican field has been reduced by one. That means that the ones who have left the race now are Jindal, Walker, and Perry. And some others are still in there, which we will leave nameless at the moment. But, Jim, you put out a very frustrated case for why Bobby Jindal should have had a better chance in this campaign, but just didn't. Bobby Jindal, very strong conservative campaign, getting out. He sees the numbers aren't that good, although he was seeing a little bit of an uptick in Iowa, but probably not enough to really get into contention there. But in the end, he's out, and that's not a good thing.
I'm going to let the listeners in on a little secret here, Greg. You had suggested this is the good martini and you wanted to salute Bobby Jindal for recognizing when it wasn't going to happen for him.
Yeah.
That is a damnable lie, Greg. It was going to happen for him. I refuse to accept. Yeah. I'm totally not in denial and trashing my home office at this moment. Here's the thing. Like, there are a lot of reasons I like Bobby Jindal. The shortest and simplest way is to say, just look at his record in Louisiana. Most importantly, look at where it was when he started, 2007. This is 2 years after Katrina, and state government had utterly failed. Corruption was rampant. The crime was high. The schools were failed. And Louisiana in 2007 was in about as bad a situation as any state in the last 40 years, maybe 50 years. Bobby Jindal gets in there, and to the amazement of it, he does a fantastic job, right? This is not a guy who's a classic Louisiana politician, right? So he goes in there and he gets great results. Now I'm gonna acknowledge something people have been throwing at me all morning. His job approval rating is really lousy right now. Basically, as you know, he got reelected in 2011. Fairly early on at that point, he started focusing on presidential ambitions. He clearly started putting out federal policies, but he started thinking about what he wanted to do if he were elected president. And this irked people in Louisiana. People might say, well, you shouldn't run for reelection if you want to run for president as well. Greg, do you remember how much grief Obama got for missing all those votes in the Senate in 2007, 2008?
Zero.
Yeah, and how much grief did Hillary get?
Zero.
And Kerry missed an entire, like, 3 months worth of votes, right? I mean, you know, earlier this year, we saw this thrown at Rubio. Look, when you have a really good governor or senator, they're going to run for president. Now, if you like the guy, you should be happy about that. Yes, it's going to take him away from the day job, but maybe everything you like is going to be in the Oval Office and you'll see all the same good results. But here's the thing that I really don't get, Greg. Let's say you're a Louisiana Democrat, or for whatever reason, you really don't like Bobby Jindal. Why are you complaining that he's not spending time being governor? Here's really probably the most painful lesson to me about Bobby Jindal's failure to, let's face it, not just, you know, not get elected president, not just not get the nomination. Greg, he never was on the big boy stage.
That's right.
Right? I mean, he was consigned to the kiddie table the entirety of the time, really never broke low single digits in this. He had a record of conservative governance. Right, we're not guessing what kind of a president Bobby Jindal would be. There's a good 7 years for you to look at there. going on 8 years, I guess, of him being governor. I look at those results and I think they're fantastic. He's not a real estate developer. He's not a brain surgeon. He's not a former tech company CEO. You know what he's going to do in government. And I'm very pleased with those results. Point worth noting that he can govern conservatively. And the Republicans in his own state turned against him. There are a lot of people who say they like smaller government until it starts cutting something they like, and then they completely turn against it. There is a strong case to be made, Greg. Like, this is the crazy martini, and this is the really, really depressing martini. Conservative governance is impossible because conservatives won't fight for it. Conservatives don't want it because the moment it touches something they like, they turn against it, and they like their corner of big government. I'm throwing that gauntlet down in front of conservative voters right now to say, hey, you had an actual conservative governor here, and you're turning against it in exchange for, you know, people like Trump and Carson and everybody else. Like, the idea that the first three guys we would knock out of this process, Greg, are Rick Perry, Scott Walker, and Bobby Jindal, I would argue contends we are not a serious party.
Jim, on that thoroughly depressing note, it's time to call time. Although I should point out that my nominee for the crazy was Obama saying that Republicans are afraid of three-year-old orphans. And I only bring that up not to defend myself, but to say that Chris Christie had a great line saying he knows widows and orphans from 9/11, and that's why he's opposed to this policy going forward as is. So
burn. I still think Bobby Jindal's departing the race is the craziest. Like, it's the craziest thing ever, Greg. We already know you already know what I'll be fuming about in our end of the year awards.
Yes. Jim, on that note, have a good day, even though I know you're still in mourning, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
There are no good days anymore, Greg.
Jim Garrity.
Everybody have a terrible Wednesday. Burn it all down.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.